My name is Stephen Mandel. I am currently the medical director at the University of Michigan's outreach laboratory division called MLabs. And it's my honor to be here today. I'd like to thank Dr. Friedman for the invitation earlier this year. Since most of you are already back and everyone's been taking surveys, I'd like to take a little survey myself. How many of you, we've been hearing a lot about Lean and Six Sigma throughout the past couple days, and I know every meeting that's been given over the last year or so has had something about Lean and Six Sigma with regards to healthcare. But how many of you do not feel confident implementing Lean or Six Sigma within your laboratories or within your clinical settings? You can't do it. You can't fathom it. You're not sure how it would work. You don't know the tools, that sort of thing. Show of hands. All right, so some of you have some significant background, it sounds like, in Lean and Six Sigma. I'm assuming you've either taken conferences and that sort of thing. What I'm going to do is take you through a little bit of what we've been doing within through our outreach program, but really has implications for the rest of the laboratory division, and how we are beginning to make some exciting changes and transforming into basically a Lean Six Sigma outfit. So that's what I hope to get you through today, but we're going to be doing it using what I think at this conference is probably best called... Say again? What... I think will be best called at this conference as mental middleware. To some degree, it can also be called emotional middleware because it takes a lot of emotions out of what may be very, very difficult processes, which people may be quite opinionated about. I want to tell you a little bit about brief history about MLabs to let you know why we ended up taking this road and transforming into a Lean Six Sigma lab. MLabs is actually in its 20th anniversary. It was created in 1986. Like many other outreach operations, to sell excess testing capacity. Its hallmarks were quality service and IT innovation, which we've been able to maintain with the help of Dr. Friedman over the years, and that's helped define our niche within the market. Our market over the last 20 years has changed significantly. We've had undergone significant growth and diversification. We now serve 300 physician offices, 11 hospitals, and many of those hospitals have their own outreach programs as well. So we've become quite a diverse campus. In addition, at the same time, our on-campus activities have been growing significantly, which puts a lot of pressure on our clinical laboratory to the point that we started to have what were initially some bumps in the road. And as you can imagine, by the increasing workload and vanishing resources, that rapid growth was beginning to outstrip our capacity to produce to some degree. Because our inability to insource, because of lack of resources, our inability to insource technology on a rapid enough basis, our numbers of send-outs have been increasing significantly. Our lab send-out budget is going to be probably over $4 million this year, which because the complexity of outreach testing and send-out testing and reference lab testing for us has expanded significantly, has caused some service problems, iffy turnaround times and problems with communication. Because we've had limited growth resources, and actually space is our most precious commodity, as it probably is for many of you, it has caused within the department some degrees of infighting for limited resources. Does that sound like a familiar tune for some of you folks? Yeah. Well, it happened to us. We have little fiefdoms to some degree. I'm dramatizing to make a point, but little fiefdoms to some degree between the academic side and the service side, and between the AP side and the CP side, and between... you know, administration and clinical and that sort of thing. So this is it's probably a common theme, but that's really made us transition because what was happening is that that affected morale, began to affect quality to some degree, and our ability to really stress innovation within the outreach market. People were so busy serving the inpatient needs and the growing programs for the medical campus that our ability to innovate within the outreach program was really becoming limited. And the question is, were these just bumps in the road, or were we heading towards something worse? Were we going to be losing clients? Were we going to be losing RFPs? And were we going to be losing revenues? Well, our revenues had been increasingly going up, and finally we flatlined and actually dropped down a little bit for the first time in the last year. So the question is, was this just a bump in the road, or was this a sign of impending doom? We decided we needed to take some action. And what action would you take at this point in time? We decided that we kind of figured out what had gone on. If you look at the Kano model of client satisfaction, this center diagonal line shows you that to reach high levels of satisfaction actually takes two components. The first is if you're if you're providing basic characteristics or basic needs of your clients, you'll only reach at this bottom curved at the lower right, you'll only reach a level of neutral satisfaction for your clients. If you're providing only basic needs, then you know, you don't really wow them. In order to wow your clients and really make them happy, you need to also dazzle your clients as well. And these things we call delighters or dazzlers at the top. And when we came into the market, we had very few competitors. So pretty much everything that we did was able to dazzle our clients at that time. But if you look at this model over time, what happens is that those dazzlers that had once been the real delighters and was driving your client's satisfaction, over time become expectations. And unless you're continually improving, unless you're continually growing and putting energy and innovation into that product, what you've done is you've taken what had been a very happy client at one time and made them some of your most angry people. Now, some people might say this is actually a good thing because a lot of the innovation within our corporations, within our companies, are driven by our most painful clients, the ones that we hate to work with. They're a pain in our side, but they really make us better. So we love clients like that. We welcome their input. We decided at that time that we needed to go back to our clients and interview them and say, what is it that really we need to do for you? How can we get better? So we interviewed some of our key clients, and they began to identify some problems that we were having. And they said, you know, you guys do a great job, and errors had been very few. But with the conscientiousness about patient safety and the increasing workload of labs that you've been sending out, let's say we make an error 1 out of 1,000 times. Well, if you make an error 1 out of 1,000 times and one of the 156 reference labs that you send to makes an error 1 out of 1,000 times, that actually increases the numbers of errors for them, and the complexity to fix those errors was really problematic. So they gave us that problem. We said, great, we've got a solution for you at Six Sigma, and we'll talk more about that later. They said, in addition, you know, competitors are now entering the arena, and you need to decrease your costs. You're no longer a low-cost competitor. And we said, okay, we've got an answer for that. We'll get lean. They said, we want you to improve responsiveness and service. And they said, okay, Lean and Six Sigma can do that for us. We look like we're on the right road. They said, we want you to consistently represent the voice of the customer, the voice of the client, our voice within what we perceive as your large academic department. So we began some ventures about that. That's kind of a little bit difficult thing to do, but eventually we elevated the program to division status. So now our outreach department is at all the tables with the CP division, AP division directors, and the IT division directors, and we kind of speak the same language at the same meetings. In addition, we're developing a board of directors for Outreach Laboratory that's going to include the voice of our clients as well, coming in and out of different sessions to hear what their reaction is to directions that we'd like to take. But moreover, we found that we needed, that was puberty coming out again. Moreover, we needed to find a tool that we could easily communicate with our clients for. So we needed something to get information flow between them and us very, very quickly. And you saw how large we became and relatively diversified. For some of you that are major reference labs, this is nothing. But for those of you that have hospital-based reference labs, it's pretty sizable. And it's difficult to get communication and word to and from your clients every once in a while. And lastly, because our client base had diversified so significantly, there were demands put on us by specialties, subspecialties, a whole variety of different types of practitioners and outreach programs, physician offices, different types of hospital settings. And they said, you know, your identity has become kind of muddy within this realm. We need you to better identify your identity. And we said, okay, well, that sounds like we need to do some strategic planning and marketing. We were familiar with some of those tools. We had been doing some training within Lean and Six Sigma and began to investigate that, and we kind of had a handle on where to go for some of those. But some of those applications we really weren't real comfortable with. So we began training up our crew a little bit and began really a diligent search for what I call mental middleware. And we began to implement several programs over a very short period of time that helped us within our business operations. And I think they have made a significant impact within our lab and beginning to transform our laboratory into a Lean and Six Sigma operation. We're beginning to see the rumblings of what are some real significant changes to make problems that we've had for years beginning to go away. And I'm very excited about them. Wanted to share a couple of them with you. I'd like to do so by highlighting four products that we just began playing with, thinking that we'll learn something. But we really ended up using these now every single day. I want to give you a feel that they're easy, relatively easy to use, but moreover, as Hal was saying earlier, this sort of slam, I guess, Bruce, would you refer to this as a slam? This sort of slam is relatively inexpensive, so I've given you the prices for some of these products as well. I also need to tell you that I have no financial interest in these products. I think if you go through the marketplace, you'll find products like this in a relative abundance. There's probably many to choose from. You can choose whatever one you want to work with. I could care less. I have no interest in it. I just want to let you know that these are really working well for us. So let's begin by looking at the voice of the customer tool. We use Advisor. Some of you may have seen this at the CLMA meeting in Chicago that follows this meeting last year. Advisor was created by a collaboration of designers, marketing, market research professionals, and customer relations specialists who had previously worked for Fortune 500 companies. Advisor is a web-based tool to help build, design, launch, and analyze surveys for strategic marketing and market research. And when I began talking to these folks about implications of using a tool like this in healthcare in a laboratory setting, they were kind of shocked. I immediately could tell that we had 20 or 30 applications they really hadn't thought about, and we'll share some of those with you. This product really is quite easy. They give you all the tools on the web, and for about $99 a month or cheaper, they'll give you some lower rates on that. It's all relatively negotiable depending on your use. You can have one or as many users as you want on this secure website to help you build surveys to get in touch with your clients. And the way that their startup screen looks is that here is a list of your surveys. It tells you the status, what's open, what's closed, and what the status of development that survey may be in, whether it's still in development, launch, or whether there's actually data there for you to analyze. If you click on the new survey link up at the top, it takes you to basically a survey building wizard, question by question, allowing you to choose from a variety of different question types, including open-ended, multiple choice, matrix multiple choice, where you have the selection of five choices up at the top, and then your list of questions where they can choose slightly disagree, that sort of stuff. And there's a whole variety of questions in here. So building the survey itself, they make actually quite easy. Here is a survey that's in process that shows you there's also drop-down lists that you can use if you want them just to choose one choice, and also a list at the bottom that shows you that you can do check all that apply. So the building part of this process, like I said, is extremely easy, but the real power of it is what happens afterwards. You can analyze all your data basically in real time, and they give you the data in several different sorts of formats. They give you the raw data. If you look at the numbers of responses there, they give you ratios or rates of responses. If you look on the left part of the screen there, those orange lines, this is what sort of academic division are you in if you're a professor, assistant professor level? And the answers here are tenure track and clinical track if you can't read that, but those orange lines are sized and according with the responses there. So they give you some very quick graphical analysis on this. In addition, there's statistical analysis. You can see at the below those orange lines, there's mean standard deviation information. The best thing about this is you're one click away from exporting this information to Excel or other spreadsheets that you choose to do a better graphic analysis or different graphic analysis and data analysis if you choose. As I mentioned, they intended this to be a market research tool, looking for customer satisfaction, looking at competitors, how you might stand within your competitors. But we started to play with this tool, and it really has a tremendous number of applications, some of which are silly but are so easy to do. We have how many staff do we have or faculty in our department right now? 70, something like that? Faculty. 95 faculty. And you can imagine if, you know, you want to get together and throw a dinner and you want to know who's gotten the chicken or the fish, how relatively difficult that is to do on a relatively short period of time. So if you send out this survey tool, you can find out, you know, what we're having for the holiday meal this year and what everybody wants. So even silly applications like that have really enhanced our communications. We've had problems with our residency program in terms of getting evaluations for residents, doing it in a timely fashion. This tool is actually driven in the background as well by a whole variety of email functions, either to selected individuals or to group emails as well. It tracks who's responding and who's not responding, what individual responses are, and it can also label them as anonymous, but allow you to track them by an ID number. It allows you to find out who has not responded and resend the survey to them and with a reminder that you haven't responded yet. So our ability to actually get back information for surveys, people that come through the department and interview with several folks during a day, we can get a real quick evaluation and build these tools relatively quickly. This obviously is a great tool for getting in touch with our clients. So if there are initiatives that we need to know about or customer satisfaction surveys that we need to get to, we can now get to 500 people relatively easy. Actually, many more than that. It's a web-based thing, and you could look at, you know, the world's population should you choose to. Now, the rest of my task is going to be extremely difficult today. I do not have enough time allotted to really give you the whole array of what these different tools can do. Advisor is much more powerful than what I've shown you here, and we're going to get into Lean and Six Sigma tools as well. And I'll tell you, I can only show you a couple of screenshots, and I hope the screenshots that I'm going to show you of these tools will give you just a feel for the ease of implementing these sorts of things. And that's all I can get out of you, out of this group right now. But let me just take another quick survey. How many of you think that doing a Lean or Six Sigma workshop through the InfoTech Summit might be a very useful thing to do next year for maybe an hour or two, something like that? So maybe about half the group, 40% something. So there'll may be opportunities down the road. I think these issues are going to become so much more important within the informatics industry. I think it's going to become much more important for our residency programs. We'll talk about that during the panel discussions a little bit. But now I needed to give you just a little bit of a brief overview. And for those that have not been through Lean and Six Sigma programs, just give you a feel about how they operate and how these tools will work within those settings. Healthcare needs Lean and Six Sigma. Lean and Six Sigma, as you heard earlier, evolved out of the Toyota management system. Initially, Deming's rules evolved into the Toyota management system. They've been found to be remarkably successful in the manufacturing industry and are working their way into healthcare. They're very uncommonly used currently within the laboratory setting, but I think that statement will not be true within a year and a half or 2 years. I think labs are going to boom with regards to these sorts of applications. Why? Because they reduce costs, not just selling price. They reduce turnaround time in significant ways. They reduce wasted time, energy, motion, and effort on bad process. They improve service levels. They increase customer satisfaction. In our area, they use space more effectively. So if you can free up 30 to 40% of the space that you're using in your clinical operations, that's a dramatic change for us and allows us tremendous opportunities to reutilize and re-engineer the space that's now freed up. Improves workflow processes, and as we've talked about in the last couple days, we know that we're going to be experiencing significant staffing shortages and shortages of expertise. So these are the tools that are really going to take us forward in the next couple of years. The reasons that I love these tools within our academic environment is because for the last several years, you know, with limited resources, people have very strong opinions about what their needs are and how to get them, and there's a little bit of the squeaky wheel getting the grease on. People come out with their hat in hand and a sob story to the chief administrator saying, I need my $100,000. In the meantime, he's only got so much of a pie that he's got to divide up between the rest of the department. Lean and Six Sigma actually help us quantify the data and find out what our return on investment is, give us the metrics to make intelligent decisions rather than allowing the whining activity and the opinions and who's going to be the loudest at a particular meeting to exist. So we're very happy to have this sort of tool. There have been problems that have been going on in our laboratory that have been going on for years that people thought, you know, you can't fix it. It's too complex. It's going to take too long, too many resources. And these are tools that really allow you to get to the hard stuff, the high-hanging fruit as opposed to the low-hanging fruit, which we generally fix in a problem-solving manner day to day. The philosophies associated with Lean and Six Sigma provide a disciplined approach to continuous problem-solving and continuous improvement, and it changes corporations. So these are really going to be important for places, again, that have wallowed to some degree. Lastly, they teach people to see. They teach people to see waste and opportunity, and the people that they teach to see are the people that are on the front lines doing the work, which is really critical because the second something goes wrong, they can appreciate it, fix it right then and there before it escalates into a higher problem and it finally crosses your desk 6 or 7 months later. Lastly, the industry demands it. In Metro Detroit and southeastern Michigan, where we live in Ann Arbor, the automotive companies are implementing Lean and Six Sigma within their corporations. It's going to be a do-or-die sort of thing. Hopefully, it'll get done before they declare bankruptcy. But because we provide health care for them, they also put pressures on us to be lean and error-free ourselves. You can imagine if we all become lean and error-free by using these tools, what that's going to mean for our informatics vendors, the IT vendors that actually come into our lab. They're going to have to speak a new language as well. I think this will put a significant pressure on the industry, and that's why I think this meeting might change over the years. Now, we've all talked about process improvement and improving quality for a number of years, and what was the story? Well, we can do that. Sure, we can do that, but it's going to cost you, right? The old story was that if you wanted to improve quality, if quality dropped down, there were some internal costs associated with it. So as this curve moved to the left, your worst quality cost your system money. There was some balance by throwing resources at this. And wherever these lines intersected, you could reach probably some degree of quality that you were satisfied. If you had to throw more money at a problem to increase the quality, it was going to be really significantly expensive. So in Six Sigma language, we typically operate around a Four Sigma level. We'll show you that in just a moment. But to improve the quality to Five and Six Sigma, we thought the costs were going to become astronomical and prohibitive. That's the old belief. What we know now is really quite different. We know that by creating errors, that it actually causes more work, more rework, more problems down the line. So if you look at the long term, by decreasing errors, what happens is you actually get put onto a different curve. And for people that have had problems justifying with their institutions that we need Lean and Six Sigma, remember this graphic and take this back to your hospital administration and say, now's the time. This is going to save money for us down the road. So there's your motivation. Before we go on, I have to pause just for a second. Six Sigma and Lean have a tremendous number of tools within them, and we're just going to only cover a few of the tools today. With regards to Six Sigma, the product I'll be talking about has all of these tools available to you, as you will see. The product I'm going to talk about in Lean, I don't know of one single product that combines the entire toolkit in Lean. So we're just going to discuss the one that is predominantly used and predominantly useful, and that's the value stream mapping tool. Both of these processes, as I mentioned, have an extensive toolkit, but if you go out and buy these tools and begin to implement them, you are doomed for failure. And that's kind of what the automotive industry in the United States tried to do, is that they tried to implement the tools without at the same time implementing the philosophies. And the philosophies within these processes are every bit as important as the toolkit themselves. So while I'm going to show you some pieces of software, I encourage you to go out and buy something, look at them, try them, but really learn about Lean and Six Sigma as you go forward. If you do not implement the philosophy along with the tools, the house that you're trying to build of quality will actually tumble. And this has been shown over and over and over again. I guess, as I mentioned, the automotive industry in the United States is one such example. Let's look at one of the Lean products. This is EVSM, which stands for Evaluating the Value Stream Map. EVSM is an Excel-based add-in tool for lean and process improvement projects. It was actually developed for the manufacturing industry. And again, when I called the person that wrote the software to do this and told them we were looking at this product for our lab in healthcare, they were kind of flabbergasted because they had no clients really that were using it. All their clients were using it in the manufacturing industry. The value stream map, for those of you that are not lean scientists, is based on what we've all used before as a process map, or what we know as a process map, and this term's a little bit become cliche now, but a value stream map really is a process map on steroids. The value stream map is a visual tool for identifying all the activities of the planning and production process and allows us by documenting those where waste may be occurring within the system. The value stream map provides a tool to visualize what is otherwise usually invisible, and this is what we talk about in teaching people to see or learning to see waste within a system. The process works by developing a current state map before improvements can be made so that we can actually quantify and get metrics on the changes that we want to make and how they're going to affect our program. So now I could come into Mr. Napolitan and say, look, I need $100,000, but it's going to make us $250,000 in the next year and every year after that. I've learned to speak administrator ease. The real significance of a value stream map is that in the real process, in the real world, when you go to a value stream workshop or a lean workshop, this is done by the people that are on the front lines, and it's done on eraser boards or it's done in pencil, and it's a real mess to look at. Post-it notes, where I think you should go out and buy stock in post-it notes if you're going to get interested in lean. But it looks like a real mess. Only the people that have actually put this current state map together can actually understand it. And this is not the sort of thing that I'm going to roll up and take over to the CEO's office and say, oh, by the way, based on this, you know, we're going to reduce our errors by 6%, and it's going to cost us $30,000, but don't worry about it. That won't fly. We need a tool to be able to communicate in business language the benefits that we're seeing from lean projects. So this EVSM project, again, is an overlay for EVSM. You can actually start up Excel by clicking on the application. There's a link or a shortcut that sits on your desktop, which brings up, which actually brings up Microsoft Visio, which we use extensively for process mapping. But this adds an additional set of tools, not only custom-made icons that are used in value stream mapping, but also some science and programming behind it. Here you see within that little box that is labeled A10, and this is in a manufacturing example, the I triangles generally stand for places of inventory where product is being held at bay. When we talk about a process map on steroids, what really makes this robust is the data that goes along with each part of the process. So we look at things like cycle time and change over time and how many operators does it take and how what's the uptime for the piece of equipment, what's the failure time, what's the success rate for a particular production process. And we begin to link these together. The beauty of this is that for each of these processes, you can attach a little tag, as you see that A10 tag is present there, to each of these processes, which then will link that data to an Excel spreadsheet. Incorporating that data in for analysis and also linking to other data within the value stream map. So as we go forward, and this becomes a very, very complex process, and here you see our green processes at the bottom. The red is electronic information flow going back and forth. At the far left is our customer, our providers, and at the far right are our clients or our end customers. You can see as data flows through this process, it becomes relatively complex as to how one thing relates to another. So EVSM has another process to track the relationships that you're making from point to point along this way and allows you to simply put this into value-added and non-value-added steps, identifying what is worth paying for by the customer and what is potentially waste. And it gives you summaries and says, hey, this is a waste incident over here. You may look at reducing this sort of thing. At the end, this also has tremendous functions to add tables and keys to these sorts of charts and allow you to give summaries. So now at the bottom, if we want to put a presentation poster together that shows on the left what the current state process is and on the right a future state process showing that we're using 3 or 4 less steps and we're going to save 3 FTEs in the process and $100,000, it's relatively easily seen and understood rather than rolling out that piece of plastic for the administrator. You can give them a presentation like this. So this puts those tools in your hand. That's only a sketch of it. If you want to learn more, I'll be around for the next couple days. We can talk more about it. QE tools I have some real affection for, mainly because it was developed by folks at the University of Michigan. Pat Hammett, who I've become to know over the years, has developed it for a Six Sigma course in healthcare that he uses this, and actually at the end of that course he gives away the software for free, which is nice. For those of you that don't actually attend the course, it costs $100, so you can get it and use it. And this has the complete array of tools that's required in a Six Sigma process. It's an Excel-based add-on tool and allows you to take yourselves through the quality improvement projects at the same time following some of the philosophies of Six Sigma that we mentioned a little bit earlier. What is Six Sigma? We've heard it referred to in terms of giving us the ability to reduce errors, but where does the six come from and where does the sigma come from? What does that mean? For those of you that can remember back to your statistics days, a lot of statistical events that we see actually copy a normal distribution where you can see the mean in the center and fading out towards each side. And sigma, as you recall, is the standard deviation from the mean. So if we talk about sigma as a metric moving out one standard deviation to either side of the mean, we took a random sample of a population, 68% of the time or so, we would be able to get something from within that one standard deviation if we're operating within a one standard deviation metric or level of quality. What that means is that we've got 32% of the events that are actually operating outside of our quality metric, and those in the manufacturing world would turn into errors. And we talk about in Six Sigma how many defects per million. So if you're operating a level of one sigma, you have over 300,000 defects per million. Okay? As we increase the sigma level or quality level, moving our quality actually out and creating fewer errors, you'll see that by the time we get to Six Sigma, we're approaching about one error or one defect within a million opportunities. And that's where we're trying to go. And why are we trying to get there? We're trying to get there because lab operations typically will operate somewhere between 3 and 4 sigma. And because of the Institute of Medicine's report on errors in medicine and how they relate to deaths within our environment, because of that publication, everyone is demanding we become safer and error-free. And this is the way to really do it, is to drive it home. That's what Six Sigma means as a metric, as a philosophy for some of you that don't understand it. You know that all the processes that we have, if you've been in the chemistry lab and you've looked at process control charts, we allow some variation from the mean. We'll accept 2 standard deviations away from the mean, and that result's still going out as that's okay. It gets to be 3 standard deviations, we get to be worried, and you know Westgaard's rules and applying them and all that sort of thing. Well, we know that processes, particularly where there's humans involved, which is why automation has gotten so popular, where there's humans involved, processes can vary quite significantly based on a whole variety of things, training, just human nature. If our process begins to drift from the center a little bit, you'll see at this upper limit in the red zone that we'll begin to get increasing errors, and we need to be able to set up systems that can detect those increasing errors. In addition, if our process becomes variable at both ends of that spectrum, we're also prone to increasing errors of different types on the two different extremes. And what Six Sigma does, both philosophically and with the tools, is it both narrows that variation and centers the process at the same time, and it does so extremely effectively. And it's this variation reduction coupled with process centering that create less potential for defects in all of our systems. And this concept of defect reduction originated in the manufacturing process, but it applies to every single process, which I think we'll talk more at the panel, but means a real change for what we're going to be interested in the next 10, 15 years within pathology and laboratories. For Six Sigma to help you create a breakthrough strategy, it helps you first characterize a problem, and then it helps you optimize the solution or optimize the process. And it does this using 5 main steps. Characterization is broken down into 3 steps. It helps you define the problem, helps you measure and quantify what the impact of that problem is, helps you analyze the root cause as to what, why that problem is occurring, and then encourages you to do some experiments to see if you can actually get rid of the root cause or if changing something actually makes a difference in an analysis phase. Then it takes you through the optimization segment where you can improve the process and monitor how your improvements actually had an impact. Most of the tools that are being used, again, are statistically derived. And it's things that, for those of you that have an extensive knowledge in statistics, would be able to pick up relatively quickly. And the thing that differs about Six Sigma from several other process improvement programs, it's very strict about setting up controls and helping you identify what the real control and what the real indicator of problems is. It's very strict in that manner. And the other thing it's very strict at is it doesn't let you take any shortcuts. At every single step, the philosophy mandates that you go through a check with me process, and you go through the checklist for each of these different phases through what's called a toll gate manager. So you can't slip up. You can try, and there are certain things that you run into that is a just do it. You don't need lean. You don't need Six Sigma. You just do it. But going through this process, it keeps you from losing track. How does QE Tools fits into this? QE Tools, as I mentioned, overlies Excel's spreadsheet. It's a data-driven, statistically-driven process which gives you in sequence and also with the DMAIC, D-M-A-I-C, the DMAIC roadmap, all the tools in the sequence in which they're supposed to be used, which helps guide you through the process. So if you want to begin learning about Six Sigma but are concerned about, okay, I've learned about it, can I actually apply it, this tool would really help you in its application. So it takes you through all of that. It gives you, as I mentioned, every tool that's available within the Six Sigma program. If there are additional tools that become developed, I imagine they'll add them on. But these are the numbers of tools that they have available to them right now. Part of the philosophy is how do you work with members of your team and how do you become creative and innovative and work together to help solve problems. And they actually give you some of the structure and the diagrams that take you through these work group processes to help break down problems into their different components so that you can begin working on what is the root cause analysis. Where within our processes do we have problems occurring, and what may be the root cause for this particular problem, in this case, poor turnaround time, and identifying that and then working on that. So there's issues of scoping which go into the philosophy of Six Sigma, and this leads you through that process. We've got a few more slides to go on this. One of the primary tools that, and I'm speaking to the manufacturers in the IT industry right now, because this is not a tool that I've seen in anybody's toolbox for data analysis, at least built into their LIS functions. If you have it, raise your hand, interrupt me, let me know. If we look at a lot of processes over time, and let's just say that purple normal distribution is what one pathologist did for one day's work, and this is their turnaround time for those cases that were signed out during the day. If we look at that pathologist over time, that process will have some variation from day to day, and that mean will shift and the ends will shift, and there'll be some natural variation in this process. And this is a very hard concept for us to display to pathologists statistically, particularly when we want to compare them to one another. A box and whiskers plot is an extremely useful tool when sitting down with people who are skeptics to show them that there's incredible variation in the processes that they're doing. And box and whiskers plots are, like I said, I don't believe, if you've got a box and whiskers plot in your LIS right now to analyze data, can you raise your hand? Yeah, nobody does. Well, next year we'll see what the difference is, because I think they really come in handy. And what this does is it takes you the statistics of looking at these normal distributions or variation over time, and if you plot them with this horizontal box, as you see in the middle, with the percentiles as displayed, 25th, 50th, 75th, and then use whiskers at the top and the bottom to display the upper limit and lower limit, you can get a sense for how much variation there is by a particular variable for that particular process. So this has been a very important tool for the pathologists in our group, and people, like I said, who are skeptics, have been difficult to move. When you show them that, you know, our turnaround time is variable. We might have a 90th percentile of X numbers of hours or X numbers of days, and you say, yeah, that's good enough. But what does that mean when we begin to break it down and we look at our lung cases or our gin cases? And should we ever have a case that takes us 12 days to sign out? This allows them to see side by side. If you can imagine, these are pathologists side by side, and you had to go to the operating room on Monday, and your slides get in on a Friday, which of these pathologists might you want to sign out your case to make sure you can actually go to the OR by Monday morning? This one, the second one in this group that has the lowest variability and the fastest turnaround time, is very easily identified. This is not an answer, though. Just remember, in the philosophy, this is a tool that helps us tell people that, yes, there is variability in a process. And when we see variability in a process, that becomes a target for a Six Sigma tool. So this does nothing but educate people. This is not an answer, but just the beginning of a series of questions. Let's leave the Lean and Six Sigma tools and talk about the marketing piece, and we'll be done in just a few minutes here. Our client said, you know, you better need to define what you are in the marketplace. And typically when we originated, we had kind of three strategies here. And there's three general strategies when coming into the outreach market and expanding your outreach operations. You can be the low-cost provider for that area. You can be a focus niche and go into some sort of specialty testing and actually gain some business that way. Or you can try and differentiate yourself in several other areas. And just a few strategies that we employed is we really stressed education for our clients, being a center of excellence and continuous learning, inviting our clients onto our campus. We focused really on customer service early on, and that had been the hallmark of our program. And then again, because of our strength within the IT division, we were able to align them with some flexible configurations for resources and give them help in communicating back and forth for some of our large interface clients. What happened, though, is as competitors entered the market, they began to eat away at different components of what our market was. And we were really concerned that we couldn't maintain this. If somebody was doing something special in a focus niche, we were going to be losing their business to them, because if they were taking heme flow cytogenetics and doing a bang-up job and creating these beautiful reports with pictures and flow and data and all that sort of stuff and web access, we were having a hard time. So we were concerned that our business was really going to be vanishing. And we needed something to come back and create a strategic plan and get our business house in order and find out what direction do we need to be going in. So we began a search for business tools. We have MBAs certainly in our division, but they're extremely busy doing different things. They're planning new buildings. They're handling budgets. They're in lines for automation, new informatics ventures, and those sorts of things. And what we really needed was we needed a couple of expert MBAs in the outreach business to actually come work with us for a period of about 6 months. So we started to ask around, and they said, you know, we have a really renowned business school at our university. And they said, yeah, we can do that for $130,000, which we didn't necessarily have at the time. So we started to look around again, and we said, okay, well, let's see what we can do internally. We ran into, again, this perfect product, this mental middleware. This is from Business Resource Management. They have a couple of different modules that, depending on what you're looking for, pricing, market analysis, competitor analysis, strategic planning. And we looked at their product for strategic planning, and actually I've had one of my colleagues, Sue Valliere, who manages our outreach program, look at the pricing module for me. This, like the other products I've shown you, gives a wonderful graphic analysis of information it asks you for during an interview process. This is kind of like TurboTax for an expert MBA. It takes you through with your MBA dialogue wizard, requests you data of you, things that you would not have known to look at in your business process as being important, and actually helps you quantify them and present them in a graphical mode. The other beautiful thing about this particular product is that it also gives you wonderful textual reports, as you'll see in just a moment. The variables that they look at are all listed down below, and there's just too many for us to look at. But the way that they look at these variables is kind of unique. They allow you to look at not only your own business, your own corporation, but they cause you to evaluate your competitors as well in ways that maybe you didn't look at. You know, at our house, we're an academic medical center. We run a hospital laboratory, and what we had is what we produced. And we never really cared about what our competitors were doing because we were doing what we were doing. This actually causes us to evaluate our competitors. And in addition, it causes us to look at our customers as well. So as it takes you through this TurboTax or this expert dialogue, it causes you to look at all three of these characteristics by asking significant questions about all of them and beginning to quantify what may have been unquantifiable before. This is what their screens look like. As you see, they talk about your resources on the toolbar on the left. They take you through this interview process, a narrative process where you can modify and add commentary to justify what your explanations for data input are at each of the steps. And as it goes through this, at the end, in addition to these wonderful reports that are produced, and this is something that I'd be proud to hand my chief department administrator or the CEO of the hospital. This is the sort of format that they can understand. It also produces wonderful graphics in ways that we hadn't looked at them before. Radar plots, areas of opportunity plots. They do a lot of things with greens and yellows and reds and show you areas of opportunity in the greens and areas of what may be trouble in the reds. And it's really easy to understand and see and demonstrate to people where your opportunities are. Now, we've come to the end here. This is a quick survey of four key tools that we use in our operations. And I think this is a real bellwether for the industry. We've had a lot of people that were talking around Lean and Six Sigma. And I think if we begin to learn the tools, because they are relatively easy, and we begin to have access to the tools, it's our nature as investigators and scientists to use them and play with them and find out what they actually can do for us. That's within our nature. I think that's going to begin happening. For those of you that have not participated in Lean and Six Sigma projects within your own institution, I'll say to you, what are you waiting for? There's great opportunities out there. Every conference you're going to go to is going to present these opportunities to you. And if for no other reason what they've done is one of my gurus has told me before, is they've taught us to speak to a significant proportion of our workforce that we always had a difficult time communicating with before. As I mentioned, there's been a lot of whining that goes on in our department for limited resources, and this really teaches us how to talk so administrators will listen. And I really support you getting into this sort of activity. It's had rave reviews. If you look at the Christian Science Monitor, it says, this will bring about more cooperation from administrators than all the yelling and pleading in the world. So this is something I really recommend for you. I think this is going to be quite significant. As you know, this is large in manufacturing processes, and many of our corporations are getting into this. Hal referred to one earlier, Intuitive, which is thinking lean for the client and giving us lean processes. HBOC and what they've done with their business tools and profitability monitors is lean. Cerner Corporation has a bedrock product for building your implementation, which I think is lean. And by nature, you folks within your individual fields are lean thinkers. I think you just need to flesh that out and learn the tools, learn the philosophies. What that's going to mean, though, is that pretty soon you're going to be coming to your IT vendors, people that run your automation line, the LIS folks. And can you imagine how, if you are now lean thinkers and are Six Sigma experts, the demands are going to change of what we're requesting of our industry? We talked earlier about how our customers, the ones that are the pain in the butt, really drive changes within the industry. And I think what we're going to see is a change in motivating force coming from you folks for our corporations to not only be lean and have Six Sigma programs and declare them and demonstrate what they are to us, but also to help us using middleware solutions or providing middleware solutions to become leaner and meaner as we go ahead. So I think their heads are really going to be spinning in the next couple of weeks or so. And I think this is so significant. You've heard about the Chinese character for crisis. It means both danger and opportunity. It's made up of two characters here. And I think this really is going to be a crisis for the people that are going to be selling us things if we get our act in gear. By this time next year, I imagine heads will be spinning. I hope they haven't been for this.